Hey guys, my name is Anthony Bandiero, attorney for Blue to Gold Law Enforcement Training, bringing another webinar. Welcome to Terry Stops and Pat Downs. For those who are watching on demand, you're going to see that I'm interacting with some people that are online. We have several hundred officers from around the country. They're still putting their agency in the chat, and there's just hundreds and hundreds of agencies here. That's not including the shoulder surfers, the people that are watching and not logged in. So I'm glad you guys are here. It's a hot topic. Even if you cannot attend live, it's still worth it to sign up because I'll send you a link to this video for free. For those who are watching on demand, feel free to send this link to your peers, to officers in other agencies. Let them know that we do these webinars every single week for free. And Teresa, are you aware of anybody, any company out there that does as much free training as us? I'm not. Okay. So that's why I get paid the big bucks to do the free training. My wife is like, honey, why can't you do more free training? It's so worth it. It's so paying off for us. Okay. So some disclaimers real quick. Laws and agency SOPs may be more restrictive. That just means, obviously, we have some states here like Washington and New Mexico. And, what are some more restrictive states? So New Jersey is a tad restrictive. Just make sure that Maryland's not so bad, not case law wise, but otherwise it can be a little tough. If you have any doubts about the legality of your actions, push the chain. And finally, this course is legal education, not legal advice. I'm an attorney, but I'm not your attorney. There are attorneys on here. And if they disagree with anything that I say and they tell their officers, hey, I know that Anthony said it, but I don't agree. Guess who's going to win that battle? They are. Okay. And that's the way it's supposed to be. We're going to talk about grounds to detain. We're going to talk about levels of proof. We're going to talk about pat downs. We have, I don't want to go over an hour on this because I want to get to the search and seizure show and so forth. Hey, Rick, I did reach out to Boone. Let me see here. I did reach out to Boone and see if, see if he can be here, or I also asked if Zach can be here, because it'd be nice to have a co-host. What's up, Josh? It's nice to have you here. So, grounds to detain. Now, let's talk about hunches, right? Hunches are extremely valuable, okay? I love hunches, but here's the problem. A hunch does not give you the authority to detain somebody, right? What it does is gives you an incentive to watch that person, to maybe try to engage in a consensual encounter. I cannot tell you how often I have seen officers make what they believed to be a reasonable suspicion stop, a Terry stop, and they didn't have it. What they really had was a hunch, but they made the stop anyway, and all the evidence was lost as fruit of the poisonous tree. You guys with me on this? But if they just would have made that consensual encounter, they would have got their guy. The suspect would have done the same thing. He would have still ran. He would have still dropped the drugs. He would have still lied during the encounter, right? And the officer then could have actually built up real reasonable suspicion from that. So I just want to really bring that home. You guys are doing phenomenal work out there. We know that you are, okay? But if you're working with a reasonable suspicion case and it's a little thin, okay, you're like, man, this is barely gonna pass, the standard here of reasonable suspicion. Well, maybe try to do a consensual encounter and then see where it goes so you don't actually have that issue. Well, what is a seminal issue or seminal case on investigative detentions? You know it. I know it. It is Terry versus Ohio. And all it requires is a moderate chance of illegal activity. That is not high. That's relatively low, right? Here is partially the police report from the Detective Martin McFadden, okay? And it involves three men. It involves John Terry. It involves Carl Katz in the middle and Richard Chilton. Now, Martin McFadden is a longtime detective in Cleveland, Ohio, and he spent most of his career in downtown Cleveland, and he spent 38 years on the job, okay? At the time of this case, he had 38 years on the job. And I said to myself, self, I've never met Mark McFadden, but I certainly know one thing about him. If you have spent 38 years on a job working downtown Cleveland, I know one thing about you. You hate your wife because you do not want to retire. Why don't you want to spend the last years of your life at home, chilling out? You've earned it. But he doesn't want to go home, okay? He wants to work that OT. So we got some Cleveland officers here, so, or some Ohio officers at least. So it sounds like, you know, at least you guys think that's kind of funny. So, So McFadden, he sees these three men, and in different combinations, he sees them looking in some store windows, a jewelry store, and an airline ticket office, and so forth. And he got to say, the way that he saw them looking in the stores, it didn't look like aggressive window shopping to him. It looked like casing. He was casing the joint. And so he says, you know what? I am going to make contact with these guys. Now, remember, though, in 1963, there was no such thing as a Terry stop, obviously. And under the law, under the U.S. Supreme Court, they only recognize two encounters at this point, consensual encounters and arrest. Well, look, this is not either. It definitely is not consent because he detained these guys. And it's not arrest because he doesn't have the PC, right? He's not taking them back to jail. So he says, hey, what are you guys up to, right? What are you guys doing here? Like, why do you guys keep looking in the windows and the stores? And it was daytime and so forth. And instead of saying something rational, reasonable, believable, like, hey, yeah, we're waiting for our girlfriends to get off work. You know, her name is Jeanette. Why don't you go talk to her real quick? Instead of saying like that, he says, Terry couldn't, you know, he couldn't get any words out. He was mumbling. So then McFadden said, all right, you know, you probably really are about to rob the, you know, commit an armed robbery. And so he pats them down and he finds these two illegal firearms. Now, at the end of the day, do you believe that there is a good chance that McFadden not only prevented a armed robbery, but potentially saved somebody's life, right? And the answer is absolutely. McFadden did good police work right there. I had a person on our YouTube channel say, you know, Teresa saw this, right? The person said they need to get rid of Terry stops. It probably was like a sovereign or a constitutionalist, but, you know, not being derogatory, but somebody who doesn't really appreciate that when Terry stops are done correctly, they save lives. And you know what? We balance freedom and crime control and threat in this country. Like, I got to tell you, no offense to my friends here, but I will never, ever live in a country that all they care about is crime control. You know why? That's called a dictatorship, right? That's called North Korea. That's called Iran and so forth. I ain't living there, right? I want some freedom. I take a risk, right? But I also want rational policing. I want cops to, if they saw a guy in somebody's, like, you know, they're cruising a neighborhood and they see a guy, you know, near some bushes and he sees the black and white and immediately, like, goes into the bushes and starts hiding from the cop. That cop needs to get out of his or her car and make contact, right? We save lives. And this case is so seminal to modern law enforcement that they put a plaque where the stop occurred. And I say to you, the next time you're in downtown Cleveland, you better pay respects to the plaque. And then you better check your wallet and your phone, because that shit is gone a long time ago. Why would you be in downtown Cleveland? Do you have a drug problem? Okay. Now, what are you, crazy? Even the cops don't go to downtown Cleveland unless they're working. Now, okay, look, we have a fun fact here. The case would have been Chilton versus Ohio, but Chilton later robbed a drugstore and the owner killed him dead right there before the case went to the Supreme Court. That is interesting. But hold on, though. That still does not explain. Why wouldn't it be? Okay. I'm sorry. I got it. Okay. Now, that is, but John, it wouldn't. Did you actually, John, you're a little older. Did you actually know McFadden, by the way, in 1963? Were you guys like drinking buddies? I'm just curious because, you know, you're a little long in the tooth. So, but Terry has a nice ring to it. I love this quote, right? Reasonable suspicion requires only a particularized and objective basis for suspecting criminal activity. Based on the totality of the circumstances, we afford significant deference to a law enforcement officer's determination of reasonable suspicion. This is a great case, right? Because it's telling us, hey, we do respect training and experience. We do respect your observations. But the problem that we're going to have, though, okay, please listen up. The problem that we're going to have sometimes is that the reasonable suspicion is too damn generic. Too generic. You got to articulate here and now factors, okay? What makes this situation specific now that there's criminal activity afoot? Okay, let me give you some examples, okay? An officer was working in a high crime area and he sees this guy in a car, in a park. Okay, the park is high crime. It's open to the public. It's not like it's, you know, after hours. So we don't have that, you know, per se offense. And he sees this guy and he's parked all the way at the end of the parking lot. And he's backed in and he's in a Nissan Altima. And a lot of you guys are like, well, Anthony, there it is right there. Nissan Altima. That's at least reasonable suspicion for something. But I digress. So he sees this guy in his car messing around and, ghetto gunship. And so that's actually the Tahoe, by the way, Clayton. The Tahoe is the ghetto gunship. So just, you know, just I don't want to correct you in front of your peers, but just so you know. And so the point is that you know, he sees this guy, he's kind of like I'm sorry. So for those who are watching on demand, I just made my little joke about Nissan Altimas, and Shane, he says, actually, I was in a pursuit of a Nissan Altima today. I told you, it's reasonable suspicion, moderate chance of criminal activity, right? And so the guy was in his Altima. He was backed in, and you know, the cop thought it was suspicious. He got a call for service that took him like 2 hours to go handle that call. He came back, and who was still in his car? Backed in, all at the end of the parking lot in the park. The officer then detained him, ran him. And we kind of go from there. Based on these very limited facts, do you think that the officer violated that guy's rights, right, by detaining him? Just because he's in his Nissan Altima for practically 2.5 hours in a park? The answer is yes. Okay. Did I say anything about the guy using binoculars to look at little kids? Did I say anything about marijuana smoke coming out from the car? I said nothing about that. So the point is that. The point is that sometimes the reasonable suspicion is too generic. Okay. You got to be reasonable here. So here's another example. Now, Texas buyer tags, a lot of you guys know. Tamara's like, but it's an Altima, Your Honor, but it's an Altima. It's a 2009 Altima, Your Honor. It's not a 2025. So, Your Honor, have you seen their leasing deals? So the you know, but the point is that there was a case where a car was in a parking lot known for high crime area, known for stolen cars, but nothing, you know, just a lot of cars being dumped there. And it had a Texas buyer tag. Now, the car was in Las Vegas. Okay. The officer said, well, a lot of Texas buyer tags are fraudulent. Let me make contact. You know, one thing leads to another. The car was stolen, right? The car was stolen. But the problem is, it's not specific enough. The way I want you to look at this, okay, please, and I'm gonna give you a very good pro tip, okay? The way I want you to look at this is whenever you tell me your reasonable suspicion, okay, whenever you tell me your reasonable suspicion is reverse engineering, okay, reverse engineering, meaning say to yourself, well, if the court is gonna uphold this, if the court is gonna uphold a car in a high crime area, with a Texas buyer tag, if they're going to, with stolen cars there before, if they're going to uphold this, then what you are asking is permission to stop every car in a high crime area with a Texas buyer tag, right? Yeah. So, Rick, am I going squirrel brain? So the point is, I want you to reverse engineer it. Sometimes you're gonna be like, well, yeah, you're right. If we were able to, like, you know, stop these people, it'd just be too generic, right? Too generic. Now the court said, is that a tornado? Oh, I see it now. I thought it was like a squirrel from like far away. A law enforcement officer's experience provides background to assess relevant facts, but the inferences an officer draws from the facts must be objectively reasonable. An officer cannot rely solely on generalizations that, if accepted, would cast suspicion on large segments of the law-abiding populations. You got to be somewhat specific in your, you know, in your articulation. All right. Now, by the way, Chase, that's actually pretty damn funny. That's what we call a very witty joke. All right. And by the way, the air horns are still going off. So I was probably dead 2 minutes ago. Anonymous tips and confidential informants. Now, an anonymous tip is from someone you have no idea who it is. Okay. A known person who either has a criminal history and, you know, is working undercover, or it's a person who doesn't want to get involved. They are an informant and operate under different rules. Okay. Now, when it comes to anonymous tips, when you're going to say, I'm going to use a truly anonymous tip in your affidavit, you need to corroborate some of their information. You cannot run to the courthouse with a truly anonymous tip because you have no idea who it is, and it's a license to harass. Okay. Again, what about people who don't want to get involved? They are informants. And the way that you articulate informants is two things. Now, when I say informant, I don't just mean criminal informant. I mean a neighbor who wants to give you information on their neighbor who's involved in criminal activity, but they don't want to get involved. Number one that you want to articulate here is explain why they are reliable. What that means is tell me or the court, why should you even trust this dude? Why should you give this guy the time of day? Number two, explain how he knows what he knows. Chance, this is Aguilar and Spinelli, John or whoever else. I think it's Spinelli is how you say the other case. So the two prongs come from Aguilar and Spinelli. However, I do want to say, though, to be accurate in this webinar, since the Supreme Court case called Illinois versus Gates, the Supreme Court has ultimately said that it's actually totality of circumstances, okay? It is altering totality of circumstances. You don't need both necessarily. However, courts love these today. Okay. They do not, they keep telling us time and time again, even though the test is totality of circumstances, like most tests in law enforcement, they still remind us that they love this test. And some states also do require these two-part tests. And I forget what states, I think it's Washington, New Mexico, maybe New York, but some states do require them, but all states want them. Hopefully I'm clear on that. Okay. So thank you, Chance. So reliability, how do you prove reliability? Past performance, especially convictions. Hey, you know, this is usually for your criminal, you know, your criminals, right? They've worked in the past and they produce some good results, right? The other one is declaration against interest. This is, why is this? Because the courts believe that if somebody's being like, man, dude, I've been involved in a lot of criminal activity and so is Johnny. What's your criminal activity? Man, I've done this, 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 and this. I stole this. I hurt this person. I sold drugs this time. What they believe is that if the person is making these declarations against their penal interest, well, then they are probably being truthful about other things, right? Being honest is an indicator of being honest about other things. Lying about some things is an indicator that you're lying about other things. Disinterested citizens are reliable as a matter of law, unless you can prove that they are, you know, unless you think that they're not being truthful. And then cooperation is always going to be a factor, right? Nice, Troy. I like that. Thank you, Troy. Now, basis of knowledge. How do they know what they know? Most people are going to have this because they've seen it, right? They've seen it. They saw it with their own eyes. Or there's cooperation. Again, cooperation is always a factor in these cases. Let's talk about Florida versus JL, okay? Here is what happened in a nutshell. What happened is that an anonymous caller contacted law enforcement and they said, hey, look, there is a young kid, you know, a juvenile, right? A teenager. There is a juvenile that has a firearm concealed on his person, and he's at a public bus stop, and he's wearing this, and you know, his description and so forth. So the cops get out there and they see him. Now, within minutes, maybe, right? And they see him. They see this kid sitting at the bus stop, and they detain him. They pat him down. They find the firearm and they charge him accordingly. But what is the problem? Okay, the anonymous tip came in saying this guy has a gun. They saw this guy sitting at the bus stop. They detain him. They pat him down. They find the gun. What is the problem about based on what I just taught you? What is the problem? Okay. That's exactly right. Right. John obviously, you know, hit it on the head, right? The anonymous tip is not corroborated, right? The problem is that if we allow this, we allow harassment. We allow, hey, this guy is acting suspicious. Click. Right. This guy is selling drugs. Click. This kid has a gun. Click. Right. We don't allow that because it's a license to harass. Right. And Tom is exactly right. He says, send the cops on anyone. That's exactly right. Now, let's compare it to Babcock versus Olson. What happened here is a caller called up 911 and says, hey, there's a full on brawl in a backyard. Okay. They're like kind of like a gang fight. Dispatch heard people yelling in the background, stop it, stop it. You know, repeatedly yelling. Officers arrived 6 minutes later, but here's the deal. By the time the cops arrived, nobody was in the backyard, or at least they couldn't hear any fighting. They went into the backyard regardless to look for injured people and so forth. While back there, they saw evidence in plain view. But this tip came in as an anonymous caller, okay? Are we good, though? If this came in as, let's say, a burner phone and so forth, right? Okay. It's funny. Okay, are we good to go? Was there some form of cooperation? And the answer is yes, right? Exactly, the noises. So the background noises corroborated, right? I'm going to say collaborated, but the word is corroborated. It corroborated the tip and exigent circumstances existed when police entered the backyard. Okay, now let's talk about a very famous case called California, or Neverett versus California. Here is what happened. So this lady calls up 911 and she says, hey, this truck just ran me off the road. A few minutes later, they broadcast showing southbound Highway 1 at mile marker 88, silver Ford pickup, plate of XYZ123, ran the RP off the road and was last seen approximately 5 ago. CHP officers picked up the vehicle about 10 minutes later. They did not see any independent violations, but still though, they pulled it over for this initial call, okay? So now one thing about this was that it did not come in as a truly anonymous tip. They knew who the caller was, okay? But the caller was basically somebody saying like, hey, look, I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to sign a citation. I'm not going to sign a witness statement. Just think of it as that kind of, you know, attitude and so forth, right? So, now they pulled the car over. When they walked up to the vehicle, again, they didn't see any independent violations. They smelled the odor of overwhelming marijuana. They searched the vehicle and they found like 30 pounds of marijuana. He wasn't drunk, by the way, but they thought that maybe he was drunk depending on the call. Are we good? Okay. Are we good? And the answer is going to be yes. This is what some people refer to as the 911 exception. Okay. The 911 exception. And Vincent says, what about numerous callers, 2 to 3 or more, for a person with a weapon calls with limited info? That would be good. Okay. So Vincent, and obviously got to be something illegal, right? Not just somebody, oh man, like in Californians when they moved to Nevada. Oh my God, the guy's open carrying. Well, this is Nevada. You're supposed to be open carrying. You know what I mean? It's a cowboy state, but you know, but my point is I always think to myself, okay, fine. We have a reliable tip. I can trust this person. I believe what they're telling me happens, right? 10 rounds in the mag. That's pretty funny. Or isn't like New York 7 or something ridiculous, right? They want revolvers. Basically, hey, this guy doesn't have a revolver. So, you know, the point is that the 2 to 3 calls, Vincent, is your cooperation. Does that make sense? It is your cooperation. They're cooperating each other. So we are good to go, okay? And that means various things in different cultures, okay? But here it means cooperation, okay? Get your mind out of the gutter, guys. I run a clean ship around here. All right, as the court said, there's a few things going on here. Number one, there's a proper motive. There's not reason to believe that this person is trying to get, you know, Neverett in trouble for the wrong reason. Detailed description of the vehicle, firsthand information, contemporaneous, that means it happened here and now. It wasn't like the caller said, hey, this guy ran me off the road yesterday. I see him again. Why don't you stop him? Future location predicted. That's not quite cooperation, but it's kind of, it's still something that we add to the table, you know, put on the table. Future harm. Okay, guys, here it is right here. Here it is right here. Can be charged with a false report. Can be charged with a false report. That is the key to these 911 cases, okay? The key is, do you have a reason to believe that if push comes to shove, this person gave you a false report, that they're trying to get their ex-boyfriend in trouble, they're trying to harass people because of immutable characteristics? Do you have a way to contact those people and charge them with you know, with abusing 911 and so forth? And if the answer is yes, that falls under Neverett. So if you know the phone is a burner phone, if you know it's 911 only phone, then it doesn't work. You're gonna need some, you know, reliability. But even if they don't want to get involved and they don't want to sign a citation, but you know, you have a reason to believe you can contact them even with a subpoena, then this falls under this rule. Okay? Okay. So as the court said, they said that the motorist's use of 911 system provided another indicator of her veracity. Since that system had features that allowed for identifying and tracing callers, thereby providing some safeguards against making false reports. That is the key to that case. Yep. Okay. U.S. versus Watson. What happened here is a 14-year-old kid calls up 911. He says, hey, there's guys in this parking lot. And, okay, let me, okay, hold on. So Chance actually brings up a good question. So that case, the guy at the bus stop, look, it's an older case. It's an early 90s case. Even if it was a 911 call, it didn't have the tracing capabilities that they have today. So Neverett really focused on the enhanced 911 system and how it has the ability to basically track callers. Does that make sense? So they didn't have that. They didn't have that back in those days, at least probably not. All right. So back to Watson, this kid calls up. They said, hey, man, there's a bunch of guys out there and they're buying a greenish gray Charger. And they're just out there playing with guns. Okay. Where are you at? Oh, I'm across the street. I'm at the McDonald's and I borrowed a customer's phone, but I don't have my own phone, right? I'm not that ballin', but I'll try to stay close if you guys want. Okay. Let me send some units. The units get out there. They see a bunch of young men, not boys. They see men out there, boys to men. And the car's out there, but they don't see any gang activity. They don't see any firearms. They don't see any fight. They don't see any conflict. They just see some guys hanging out, listening to some music. But based on this call, boys out there playing with guns, they detain everybody. They pat people down. They find, you know, two or three, they find two illegal firearms. Are we good? And the answer is going to be no bueno. Okay. The answer is no, right? Here's our problem. Number one is, what's the good news? The good news is that we have a proper motive. Okay. This kid doesn't seem like he's trying to get people in trouble because of some, bad reason, bad motive. But what hurts us? Number one is, I'm still talking about. So proper motive, detailed description of vehicle, firsthand information. That's going to help us. Hey, kid, he's the one that saw this. Contemporaneous. He didn't say, oh man, last week they were playing with guns in their back. High crime area. This all helps us. What hurts us? No future harm. The kid did not say that this guy's brandishing, he's threatening, he's waving it around. The phone cannot be traced to the caller. This is fatal. Okay? This is fatal. Open carry is not illegal in the state. So having the gun out is not illegal in itself. No other crimes alleged, no weapons upon a scene arrival. Again, this goes back to my lesson. What should the cop have done? A good old-fashioned what? That's right. A good old-fashioned consensual encounter. That's the problem here, okay? Now, look, I just want you guys to know, okay? These are the water bottles that I buy because I cannot afford the full-size one because I keep doing all these free webinars, okay? So buy my books, okay? Rick, put a damn link in there, and you better buy my books so I can get a damn full size of water. I'm dying over here. Freaking dying over here. Okay. Yeah, hey, yeah, where's the offering plate? Hey, Rick, put up my OnlyFans link. Maybe I went too far in that joke. I thought that was funny, though. Put up my OnlyFans. Chance agrees I went too far. What did Sally say? Nice. That's nice. Thank you, Sally. You fed my kid for a day. Hey, tomorrow says it's going to rain outside. Hey, I'm going to open up my lid like this so I can collect some water tonight. So, all right. I mean, you know, I'm sending my other instructors to like Newport Beach, California, sending them to all these beautiful places in Florida. And I'm in West Memphis. No insult to West Memphis, but it ain't the nicest place in the world. I can tell you that. I got here and I thought I was going to get shanked, man. I mean, it was, yeah, it's, if you put the water outside, they're going to steal it. All right. So, yeah, no, West Memphis is a dump, man. This place is an absolute dump. Yeah, Hawaii, we're still working on that one. Okay. We're still working on that one. All right. Hey, look, I was telling Rick before that. There was a cop in the class, and he says, yeah, man. He says, I was checking in a hotel one time in like West Memphis. I was checking into the hotel, and I right when I got to the front desk, and I realized that I forgot my wallet in my car. So I went back to the car like only a few minutes later, and the wallet was gone. That's how quick they burglarized his vehicle in West Memphis. So if you're looking to get rid of something, you know, put it in West Memphis, it'll be gone, right? Okay, so. Okay. So we got that quote. All right. Hey, just a quick commercial break, guys. We have the best instructors. Okay. I am nothing compared to the talent we have out there. Justin Chapman, he has SRO. If you're looking for an SRO class, Debbie Huff has an amazing DUI class. She's the absolute queen of DUIs. Nobody, in my view, knows more about DUIs, DRE. She's a DRE trainer. Nobody knows more about DRE than she does and DUIs. And Nick German, who is a phenomenal, this guy knows more about social media than all the kids on this, all of your kids on, you know, combined. The guy is an absolute genius. I mean, beautiful brain type stuff. Okay. And so you got to take these classes. I'm just telling you, like, it's not just the Anthony Bandiero show. I'm just one little small cog in the wheel. I just like doing these webinars. A lot of my instructors, God bless them, but they don't have the, you know, the time and maybe the family tolerance to do these every week like I do. But please do not forget about my other instructors. They are absolutely phenomenal. Chalk. You see it, Rick, you see what Joseph said? Okay. Unprovoked flight. Okay. So unprovoked flight, is great for reasonable suspicion. It is underlying criminal activity. Articulate why they thought you were a cop. You know, I put this in there just so that my undercover cops don't get jammed up, you know, that, hey, he's running, but you know, you have to prove that he's running because he thinks you're a police officer, not just a potential gang member who's about to do a drive-by because you're creeping around, you know, in your undercover car at 2 o'clock in the morning, and describe his headlong flight. It should be like escaping, not just you know, avoidance. And I think that's a very good point, by the way. We don't look at avoidance, we look at escape. All right, so JC, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but that's how it seems to me. But as far as the phone call stuff, you're right, Jace, right? Cool, yep. Okay, awesome. So Jace says, it only holds up if the number comes back to them. What about if the phone is on a mom's plan? Look, I think it'll be fine, Jace, because the thing is, at the end of the day, you don't know that. It's only what you know at the time, right? It's only what you know at the time. Just, you know, be reasonable, right? U.S. versus Dykes. So heavy narcotics area, unmarked police vehicle. Suspect ran when the officer got out of the car. Excellent, right? High crime area. Officer made two recent drug deals. Dusk, wearing dark clothing, in an alley. Immediately ran away when he saw police. These are great. These are great, you know, articulation things and so forth. Using force, any use of force must be reasonable to the circumstances. Otherwise, it can be a de facto arrest. Torres is probably one of my favorite cases on this issue. So Torres was actually believed to be shooting a gun in a warehouse district. The officers had reasonable suspicion. They detained him at gunpoint. They patted him down. They found a weapon. He says, well, look, that was a de facto arrest. And I'm just going to read a brief thing here. But the court said, look, to begin with, there's no per se rule that pointing guns at people or handcuffing them constitutes an arrest. Terry recognized that when officers are investigating a suspect who officers reasonably believe is armed and presently dangerous to the officers or to others, it would be clearly unreasonable to deny the officers the power to make the situation safe, right? Okay, when to release, this is very, very important. The detention is like a melting ice cube, okay? The only state in the union that has a limit on how long you detain. I'm actually going to ask you guys. There's only one state that actually has a limit of how long Terry stops can last. What state is that? But other states just have a. That's right, Nevada. Yep, Nevada. Not you'd be surprised. Not New Jersey. Nevada is 60 minutes. But in other states, it's just whatever is reasonable. There has definitely been some, you know, 2 hour detentions. There have been some at the border. There's actually been, you know, several hour detentions, but it's like an ice cube. Okay. And once the ice cube has melted, that means that your reasonable suspicion has been dispelled. And if it's been dispelled, what do you got to do? You got to release this person. Okay. You cannot just hold on to him forever. What happened here is a guy took off running from a traffic stop. They call out officers in the area. They detain a guy at this bar coming out. They thought it was him. They detain him. They have him actually at gunpoint because there was believed to be a firearm involved. They detain him. They illuminate him. They realize that it's not the guy. Okay. They actually had a picture of the dude, but it was a good stop. It wasn't a bad stop. The guy was dressed the same race, same gender, same approximate age. He was only 2 minutes from the area. But once they illuminated him, they realized that it was not their guy. But instead of releasing him right away, what did they do? They patted him down just to make sure he didn't have a weapon. He did have a weapon. And he was also a felon. This ain't going to work, right? So I'm not going to read this, but at the end of the day, what they said is once they realized it wasn't the guy and they had no reasonable suspicion or concern for their safety, they got to let him go. Here, they had a warrant for a guy that worked at this particular truck stop. They saw him coming in. They park. He parks. They get behind him. They light him up. They go up to the car. Boom. That is not the guy. They thought it was him from afar. But when they got near, they did not. They realized it wasn't him. But instead of letting him go, they demanded his license. And one thing led to another. He didn't have a license and so forth. This is not good to go, right? The stop is over. If you're going to make a stop on reasonable suspicion, the stop is over, right? Okay. There are plenty of reasons to continue the detention, right? You can't confirm their ID, multiple suspects, they ran, computer problems, et cetera, et cetera. And Salim says, what if they searched him before they realized it was him? Absolutely good to go, right? Because he was considered armed and dangerous. If they would have thought he was still the person, we would have been good to go. The problem is they realized it before, okay? Pat downs. Now, we're running out of time here, so I'm going to kind of bust through this a little bit because I want to talk about some questions, right? I want to get to your questions because you're stacking up and they're driving me crazy. So Kobe, I'm gonna answer that during the search and seizure show right after here. And I have a question for you, by the way. Mm-hmm. And that's just to you. I got a question for you. Okay. Okay. So pat downs require reasonable suspicion for armed and dangerous, right? And they must be conducted outside the person's clothing. That is obviously, you know, standard fare. You learned that in the academy. Police lawfully begin to pat down a suspect and lift his shirt to see the waistband, right? Was that lawful? The answer, hold on, I'm writing something. So was that lawful, right? And the answer, generally speaking, is no. You know, you cannot do an ocular pat down on people's waistband unless it's from the outside of the clothes. You cannot lift up their clothes. But Anthony, hold on. I know Matt knows the answer. Matt, this might have been in the class that we made for you guys. But Anthony, we do high risk traffic stops. And even with reasonable suspicion, we tell them to lift up their shirt and, you know, do the whole spin around thing. And the answer is I'm fine with it. I would call that a constructive pat down because it's the only safe method to try to make sure that they're disarmed. Okay. Wow. Okay. So looking at the shirt is a search. All right. Under plain field, you can see something if it's immediately apparent as contraband. But here's my friend. Okay. Here's the deal. Okay. My friends, I want you to articulate the phrase immediately apparent. I literally want you to say in your report, I felt an item in their pants pocket that was immediately apparent as, insert the blank, and because. Let me repeat this. I felt an item that was immediately apparent as, you know, methamphetamine pipe, right? Because, right? Because you need to explain why you believe that. Okay. Police detain a suspect because he may have robbed a suspect's watch. During a pat down, you feel a watch in his right front pocket. Can you detain it? I'm sorry. Can you reach into his pocket and seize it? The answer is yes. It's not just for drugs. It's for fruits or instrumentalities of a crime, right? State versus Jackson. What happened here was an officer lawfully patted down a suspect. He felt a small lump that he knew was not a weapon. He told the court, as I pat searched the front of his body, I felt a lump, a small lump, sounds like a rhyme, in the front pocket. I examined it with my fingers and it slid and it felt to be a lump of crack cocaine and cellophane. You see the problem here? What impression is this guy giving to the court? He's giving the impression that he's manipulating it. You do not get any wiggle room for manipulation. You might get a little wiggle room for weapons, right? I'm not sure, Your Honor, it's a weapon. I got to kind of make sure. But you don't get any wiggle room for manipulation when it's drugs. Trooper lawfully conducted a lawful pat down and felt a large bulge in the suspect's pocket that, based on the training experience, he immediately knew to be narcotics. Are we good, right? I know you can be like very... The verbiage in these pat down cases can be a little risque, if you know what I mean, right? But that's just what you're dealing with, right? The point is, this is what we want to hear, right? We want that plain view stuff. Okay. So remember, pat downs are only for weapons, not contraband. Keep your hunches out of your report. And the reason I bring this up is because sometimes cops will put in there that I pat them down for weapons and contraband. No, no, no. Do not do that, right? Do not do that. Is a person's generalized criminal history enough to conduct a pat down? If you stop a guy in a high crime area and he's been to prison for a violent crime, is that enough to pat him down? Yes or no? He's been to prison, right? For a violent crime. Is that enough? Okay. The answer is going to be no. And I talk about John Ponder. John Ponder is a three-time felon, former gang member, former drug addict, and he now runs a nonprofit called Hope for Prisoners. He's a very well-respected man in the Las Vegas community. He's a good guy, okay? He had his problems, but he found Jesus in a very literal sense, And now he's out there trying to get other people to live a good life. And, you know, and the reason I bring that up is because, look, you know, if you pull over John Ponder, he has a criminal history. You're not going to pat him down. But also, can I tell you why? Because John is going to be a 10-2 guy. He's going to be a no, sir, yes, sir. Yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. He ain't going to be delayed stop. He ain't going to be challenging your authority. He ain't going to be conducting furtive movements. You get my point? My point is this. Fine. You got somebody with a criminal history. But where is the here and now stuff, okay? Not something about their past, okay? People can, it doesn't happen a lot, but people can turn their life completely around and become very productive members of society, okay? So I want that here and now stuff. I want that here and now stuff. The 10th Circuit has recently reiterated that standing alone in criminal records, let alone arrest of or suspected gang affiliation, is not sufficient to create reasonable suspicion. Martin says, what about parole? Well, first of all, in California and Arkansas and Illinois, those states are like, you can search them anyway. You know what I mean? Without any reasonable suspicion. But the point is that generally speaking, I, Anthony Bandiero, search and seizure expert, do not have a problem patting down people on parole. Okay. I don't. I will tell you, I don't think it is even, there's not going to be Chase. There's not going to be a search clause for pat downs in there, right? What's going to be is for a full blown search, but we're talking about, is there reason to believe that they could be armed and dangerous? If they're on parole for a violent crime and they're on parole, I just can't see us giving us the cop too hard of a time. The court's giving a cop a hard time because he just patted the guy down to make sure that he's not currently armed and dangerous. I don't see it. The guy's still on parole. He has not been, rehabilitated per the law at this point. He's not been rehabilitated, right? He's still under that watchful eye of the courts. All right, here's our big three takeaways. Number one, police must articulate specific facts for Terry stops. I want here and now stuff. Do not give me generalized, he's in a high crime area, Nissan Altima. You know, maybe it's enough in some places, but the point is, give me some here and now stuff. And also, can I be honest with you? Every time, I don't want to generalize, but most of the time that I look at your videos, most of the time that when I look at your videos or talk to you about your case, do you know that I find like double the number of articulation points that you didn't articulate? Rick, can you put in the chat, the RSPC pocket guide? Guys, you got to buy this book, okay? The RSPC Pocket Guide is basically designed to get you to articulate more, okay? You got to articulate in 2025 and beyond. Unprovoked flight is a good reason to detain. And once reasonable suspicion is dispelled, you must release the person. Okay. Yep. So Joseph says, Arkansas say search waiver can be searched without cause. Yes, we are still trying to figure out if we can do a traffic stop, just a search. Okay, let me ask you this. Joseph, do you think you can stop the person on the street to do the search? Then how's the car different? You know what I'm saying? How is the court going to say... They may not like it, but right. I just don't see. I mean, really, to my knowledge, the Arkansas law is kind of like California's law, and California can do it. So I think it's more intrusive. But I will tell you, I had a cop tell me today that in Arkansas, they I actually looked at that case, by the way, during one of the videos. They said in Arkansas, they were stopping people in cars and taking the person back to their house to search their house. What the heck is going on here, man? That is bad case law. The car, iffy, right? Okay, we can debate that. But taking the guy back from the traffic stop all the way back to his house to search his house, talk about ridiculous, man. 100% ridiculous. And, it's just talk about abusing the privileges that the court has, the legislature has given you. Okay. Guys, before I go into trivia, before I start answering your questions, did you find some information useful? Okay. Awesome. Give me a thumbs up. Give me a heart. Give me a smiling emoji. But I will tell you this. If you want to repay me, I'm not going to hand out, I'm not going to ask for more water. Okay. I'm going to ask you to sign up for social media. Teresa, our social media manager, works her tail off. You got to see that booty. There ain't no booty left there anymore. Not after working for Blue to Gold, it's gone. Okay. She works hard for you. Please, guys, please sign up for our YouTube, our LinkedIn, our Instagram. Okay, guys, thank you so much. Hold on. Don't go anywhere. It's trivia time for those who are watching on demand. Thank you. Appreciate you. Share this with your friends. Sign up for more webinars on bluetogold.com. And until next time, my friends, you guys stay safe.